Good morning. Welcome to Digging the Dirt. Today we're going to talk about the outside and looking for plants and drawing pictures of plants. My guest is Dorota
Haberlihai.
Thank you. sorry, I'm not. Who is a teacher at Seaside High School, also local botanical artist, and leads walks and does all kinds of really creative things. She has coloring books. She's always on the move and doing wonderful things. Good morning, Dorota.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Okay. So you are from Poland. That's... And I want to talk about, you have such a different perspective on things. Your background is different. You grew up differently. You know, I grew up on a big suburban lot with fruit trees and whatever. A sort of a common place behind that, and just lots of places where people ran around and ditches and water and hills all over the place, and a pretty sort of out in the country place, and had that kind of growing up where we would, you know, walk over the hills to go do whatever we were going to do, run into cows and coyotes. Mm-hmm. So what was it like how you grew up?
Mm-hmm. I grew up in Poland, and przy okazji pozdrawiam wszystkich słuchaczy, którzy mówią po polsku. I have to say hello in Polish. I grew up in Poland, and it was a little bit different because I was born in 73, and in a small town called Tarnobrzeg, a lot of people, most people lived in apartment buildings that were built after the war, because a lot of Polish cities were destroyed during the war. Mm-hmm. So most people lived in very, very small apartment buildings, small apartments, maybe one bedroom apartments.
For a whole family?
For the whole family. Uh-huh. So there was no dining room or living room. It was just usually my sister and I shared one bedroom and my parents lived in the living room. And most people lived like that, fairly small spaces. But there was a lot of open space around as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of parks, lots of forests. We live close to a river. And most people owned community gardens because we didn't live on a farm or didn't have a lot of land. The government sponsored small community plots and everybody had access. They were larger than the community gardens here. They were probably quarter of an acre or maybe 0.2 of an acre.
Oh, for each person?
For each person.
Or each family. Mm-hmm. Oh, so you could really grow quite a bit of
yes,
your produce.
Yes, so my parents and my grandparents both had community gardens and they grew, you could have fruit trees and raspberries and gooseberries and but flowers and vegetables, and some of people also had greenhouses. And then there was also lots of open space and very few highways. You know, when I was growing up, there were in my apartment buildings for maybe 25 families, there were maybe two cars.
Uh-huh.
So the landscape wasn't fragmented so much with roads and cars. There was more walking and bicycling and kind of an irony that we lived in an apartment, yet we had a lot of access to nature and open space.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so now you live in Seaside, and how did you get into doing drawing?
You know, I love Pacific Northwest, and I have always been drawing since I was little. Mm-hmm. And I studied art in college. One of my degrees is in art. My other degree is international studies with focus on indigenous cultures. So I've always been drawing and sketching, but plants in particular, I've loved hiking since I was little. I used to go, my grandparents were mushroom hunters. And one of my first memories are going mushroom hunting with my grandparents, my paternal grandparents, often. And just going out in the woods, and they were able to identify probably 50 or 60 different species of mushrooms. And my grandma would bring, my grandparents would bring the mushrooms to the kitchen, and we would help clean them with a little brush, and we would string them and hang them from the ceiling in the kitchen and dry them. And as needed, my grandma would cut the string and rehydrate the mushrooms and use it for soup in the wintertime.
And did they dry because of the heat in the house or because you had a fire?
I think just the heat in the house, the warmth in the mm-hmm. house, and a lot of it was from the steam in the kitchen. Things when you're cooking, there's a little bit of heat and warmth.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember that smell vividly of the dried mushrooms.
Very earthy smell.
Yes, very beautiful smell. And we've hiked a lot too with my parents and grandparents. Picked a lot of berries. We have a wild blueberry that's similar to a evergreen huckleberry here that we picked a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a very tasty blueberry. And we also It's mm-hmm. a smaller bush. It's a deciduous bush. It's kind of a mix between evergreen huckleberry and a like a Himalayan or Alaskan blueberry.
Mm.
But they're very tasty.
And well, some people from Alaska say that the Alaskan blueberries are the sweetest.
Mm.
But of course, they're from Alaska.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that we foraged for, besides berries and mushrooms, were flowers. A lot of people in Poland, and it wasn't just my family, it was a popular practice. People loved going out into the fields and picking chamomile flowers and drying it for tea, linden flowers from the trees. We picked elderberry flowers, variety of different yarrow. So there are a lot of herbs that it was just a very popular pastime.
And all those things grow here?
Very similar. Mm-hmm. Very similar plants grow here. We see a lot of yarrow on the beach that you can harvest in small amounts and dry and make really tasty tea.
How do you know if it's okay to pick or not pick?
Well, what I do is... when I enjoy hiking here, we have such a beautiful area for hikes, and I get to know the plants slowly. I like to draw and bring my sketchbook and start with sketching and go home and spend some time researching and identifying the plants. I go on a lot of hikes with people who are more knowledgeable than I am, and just learn from people and from books and reading and researching.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you have some really cool coloring books. And I've seen them in bookstores, and not just in Astoria, in Portland as well. What are they? They're...
I started in 2012. It was a summer project. I started with an ABC of native plants of the coastal Pacific Northwest. And it started first as just... hiking and sketching, and then it evolved into a project. I thought, you know, I think I might be able to find a plant for each letter of the alphabet. And then I started researching, and I thought, you know, maybe I need to put it together into a coloring book because a lot of people are not just to share that knowledge of native plants. And that was one summer project, and then I spent it took me about a year, one summer researching and drawing, and then about a year figuring out how to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
And I self-published a book. I designed the cover, and I'm kind of self-publishing it, and it seems to be that works the best. And then the following summer, I had an idea to create another coloring book on native berries. And I have 14 native berries in this book. They're edible. They're local
mm-hmm.
plants that are... Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't realize they were 14. That's a lot.
That's a lot. And surprisingly, there are a lot more.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
I picked 14 of my favorite plants, of my favorite native berries that uh-huh. are edible, that I see here in this area prolifically.
Mm-hmm.
I would say there are, of course, about probably 10 species that I could identify that are poisonous berries that I have not included in the book, and probably another 15 species that are edible as well. So I'm still learning.
Wow. So maybe there'll be another book. The Advanced Berry Book.
Maybe.
Wow. That is so cool. So before we came in here, you were talking about the process of doing a drawing where describe that process where you go back to the place where the plant is. Instead of ripping the plant out and taking it home and watching it die,
right?
You visit the plant and watch it in its habitat.
Yes, a lot of... So I picked for last year, I worked on Pacific crabapple. And I wanted to create a botanical drawing of the Pacific crabapple at the different stages of growth. And I love... Once you identify the plant, you start seeing it everywhere. And it was really amazing to... I see a lot of crab apple in Gearheart, Mill Pond in Seaside, and also along the river, Nakanakum. And just going back to those areas and looking at the changes of the plant and looking at the leaves and how they change color, or looking how the flower changes into the berry or the crab apple, and then seeing the changes in the fall. And I kept that drawing. I worked on it sporadically, half an hour here, half an hour there, and I just kept adding things throughout the season. And this year, I picked Salal. And I have a spot in Gearheart I go back to and see, observe the changes throughout the year, and recorded and create. I'm creating right now, I showed you in color pencil, botanical illustration.
And it's gorgeous. You have a ton of Salal in your own yard. Why do you have to go to Gearheart?
Oh, to get away. For a change of scenery. I do have a lot of Salal.
You don't want to compete with the deer.
That's true. I do have a Salal in my own yard, but...
Only one?
No, I have quite a few plants of Salal. That's a good question. I think I just like to, be by myself in the forest. Mm-hmm. There's something about being hiking and being in the woods that's very healing. And even though I have native plants in my yard, it's a little different.
That getting away thing.
Yes.
Yeah. And that is so interesting.
I do sketch some things in my yard as well. I have skunk cabbage that I love in the springtime, and I'm letting it kind of grow and take over my yard. And that's where I like to go down next to the creek. We have a little creek that's running through the property. So sometimes I'll draw and sketch in my own yard, but sometimes it's good to get away too.
I find it really amazing that you are at a pace where you can actually draw the same picture, work on the same picture, look at the same plant over a year. Most of us are in such a hurry to get to the next thing. It's like, okay, I spent 10 minutes on that, on to the next. That's such a level of discipline over time that's it's not very typical.
Mm-hmm. I have other things I'm working on as well. It's not the only drawing I'm working on.
Oh, you have other drawings time?
Oh, sure. I'm keeping a sketchbook monthly. So every month I started my sketchbook in January. And January I filled it up with lichen and pine cones and branches. And then in February things were starting to bloom. So I was filling my sketchbook with just flowers and blooms and different kinds of things. And a little bit of writing, too. I use my journal for, or my sketchbook for a little bit of journaling as well, and writing observations that are not necessarily scientific. They're more kind of ramblings or, just kind of loose stream of consciousness or whatever comes to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And then I work on other botanical drawings as well in my studio.
Let's talk about your classes. This summer, you've got classes in the North County and in South County.
Yes, I'm offering, I'm teaching a class, a botanical drawing class at the Maritime Museum, the Barbie Center. We just started last Thursday, and it was awesome. We had a great group of people, about 17 students of various levels, some beginners and some advanced, and it's going really, really well.
When is the class? It's like, is it open or is it closed?
It's full.
Oh, it's full.
It's okay. Full. We are meeting on Thursdays from 1 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And we've worked with Salal. I brought Salal plant and we did a little bit of sketching and drawings. I'm also teaching at Hoffman Center starting in August, on August 4th. And okay. That class is open.
Okay, and that's in Manzanita. And if people want to do that, how do they, who
if
do they contact?
They can go on the Hoffman Center blog or just Google Hoffman Center in Manzanita. Okay. And they have a link to workshops. And they can sign up for, it's four Tuesdays, so four sessions from 1:30 to 4 p.m. And that's it's a little bit different focus because the Hoffman Center has a beautiful garden right across the street that the volunteers maintain. So we will start in the inside the Hoffman Center with some warm-up exercises, and then we'll go outside and work from plants.
Nice. Okay, is there something in Seaside?
I will be teaching just a one-day workshop at the Seaside Library on August 8th, and that will be designing your own journal. So if anybody is interested, they can sign up, and it's a free class. We'll create a sketchbook or a journal that people can take into the field and use this summer. And I also have a class coming up at Sitka Center. I'm really excited.
Where's the Sitka Center?
Sitka Center is in Lincoln City. It's the Center for Art and Ecology. And that's botanical drawing class at the end of August, August 23rd and 24th. I'll be there teaching.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds fun.
So, and occasionally I offer classes at Seaside Library. I really enjoy meeting people there too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about taking hikes and foraging and how to get started if you haven't done it.
I think there are a lot of, you can start on your own if you're adventurous, or go with someone that maybe knows different kinds of plants.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of places in the area. You can sign up on hikes with North Coast Land Conservancy. They have a lot of hikes and a lot of knowledgeable people that will point out plants. There's also, I'm a member of Native Plant Society. There's a local chapter here, Kathleen Sace. It's very knowledgeable, great person.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody would like to join the Native Plant Society, I would highly recommend. And if you join the local chapter, you can also go on hikes with any Oregon chapter. It's open to, you can join hikes in Portland or Eugene. Another place I've done hikes with is in Portland at the Forest Park. They have students from it's a naturopathic school, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
They lead hikes at the Forest Park, and they call them herb walks. So I've done a few of those. So that's another place where people can start. Fort Stevens occasionally offers a mushroom hikes.
In the fall, they offer a number of mushroom hikes, and I've done some of those, and they're a blast. Really
yes.
fun.
And is it Dave Osis or Dane Osis?
I think it's Dane.
Dane, that's an expert in mushrooms. So I would recommend starting maybe...
close to home.
Close to home with finding people. We have a lot of people at Fort Clatsop, Carla Cole. They're very knowledgeable about plants. And then maybe buying a few books and guidebooks and resources and then researching a little bit on your own. And right here in Astoria, we have Fort Clatsop. We have Fort Stevens. Great places for hiking and a little bit of foraging.
And then all the trails along the coast going up and down.
Exactly.
Including the peninsula.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Willapa Bay, pretty much anywhere if you get away from whatever town is there.
Mm-hmm. Or Ecola State Park, Oswald West State Park.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I noticed that people get in trouble when they're walking, when they're hiking. Could you give a caveat, like what not to do? I mean, like two people got plucked off of Hug Point yesterday by the Coast Guard because they got confused, disoriented, and got stuck in the high tide and couldn't get up.
Were they on the beach? Or
I suspect they were scampering up the rocks trying to get away from the beach as the tide was. I mean, they weren't aware of the incoming tide.
Wow, I think you have to be a little, you know, do some research about the place where you're going, and definitely make sure you're safe. And maybe if you go on the hike for the first time, go with someone that knows the trail. A lot of the trails are not marked very well. So, you know, I live right next to Tillamook Head, and we get people who have GPS and compasses that get lost up there. And I think if they just stayed on the trail, they'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and yet people get lost and they fall down the hill,
you know,
off that cliff regularly.
Mm-hmm. So there is a danger involved. Also, Saddle Mountain. There are quite a few accidents there, but so you do have to be safe, and you have to have right equipment and water, and plan for the heat and variety of factors.
Mm-hmm. We had a caller who wanted to know what is the most difficult or tedious part of the process, your process of botanical drawing. If there is such.
Most difficult process.
Or part, maybe the most difficult part of the process.
I don't find anything tedious about botanical art because I kind of have a little bit of a perfectionist, rigid personality. So, a little obsessive personality. So, I find it very fascinating to be looking at different parts of the plant. So, I don't find anything tedious about it. But difficult part is maybe when the part plants are very small, seeing it. And sometimes I continue buying little microscopes or
like a field glass, a magnifying glass.
And I keep losing them. So I never have one on me. And then capturing the small detail, because proportions are not too difficult, or shapes to capture, but the details, you know, the little tiny hair or discolorations, but I find it fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find anything tedious or difficult about it.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, I think it's really your approach is so, it's so much slower and it's so methodical. It's great. I mean, it produces great art. You do beautiful drawing.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm envious. And we had actually, my daughter and I had talked about being in the class.
And And I think, you know, if people can write, if you can write, if you've learned how to write. As in writing letters or words.
Mm-hmm.
If you've learned how to write, you can learn how to draw. Because the principle, I mean, if you can make marks on page.
I hear the teacher in you.
You can learn how. I think everybody's
capable.
So
you think everyone is capable. I think that's great. I'm such a stick figure person. But
you haven't had a good art class.
I have not had a good art class. You're right. I haven't. So, okay. So what's up for the fall? Do you have any projects?
You know, I have a super exciting project coming up at Seaside High School. A colleague of mine, Julie Green, and I are piloting a new class called Art of Ethnobotany. And Sheila Rowley, the principal at Seaside High School, was kind enough to let us
is this for high school students?
It's for high school students.
I'm totally jealous.
Mm-hmm. So Julie Green she has a science background.
Uh-huh.
And I have more of the art background and the plant, some plant knowledge. So we're going to We have a class of about 30 students signed up in the fall. Okay. And we need to plan. It'll be a combination of a little bit of science, a little bit of art, a little bit of hiking, learning about plants. And we're hoping to get the new generation of young people excited about plants and foraging.
That is great. Well, you know, I mean, if you love berries, there you can eat berries up from pretty early spring until the fall.
Mm-hmm. You can start with salmon berries. And now the salal is ripening and the huckleberries are ripening.
And thimbleberries were in the middle there.
Thimbleberries are great.
Yeah. And then we'll have, oh, you already said huckleberries.
Mm-hmm.
Blackberries are coming on. What's the kind of berry that people don't know that's edible?
I think, do you think most people know about salal?
Well, you know, I don't think they know that it's edible.
Mm-hmm. That's, you know, every time I go hiking Tillamook Head and I run into people, most people are very reluctant to try it. Even people in the class on Thursday, quite a few people knew about salal, and many local people have never tried it, and we were very reluctant to it. So I would say...
And right now, the berries are ripe.
Mm-hmm, start with salal, because it's just, once you've had salal, it's hard to go back eating blueberries, in my opinion.
So how do you eat them?
Fresh.
Oh, just raw.
Just raw, but I don't pick berries and bring them home and make things with them because I don't like adding sugar to them. And I just like eating them while I'm hiking.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a little bit of just kind of eating on the go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And salal is very good in pies. I have made blackberry pies with salal.
Mm-hmm. That would be cool. And right now with so many peaches, you could have a salal peach pie.
Mm-hmm.
My whole front porch is ringing with or surrounded by salal, and the bushes are getting very tall, and they are loaded, and I'm going to do something with them.
Mm-hmm. You can use it as a blueberry, substitute for a blueberry.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we've come to the end of our time. Thank you so much. This has been fun. I hope people are inspired.
Thanks, Anne.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
And I admire your work and what you do, having
you.
This program and letting people know about gardening and planting. So
thank
really
you.
Enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah.